us trampling on the stones. It's us down, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart, mothers were often memories, fathers were not favored on the farm, for he could do some harm, he could wreck the master scheme, for he, brothers, could dream. Your mama ain't no saint, your daddy died in a shallow stream, but your uncle Dr. King did have a dream, my brother. And what is your real excuse? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Why can't you study your lessons and stay in school? Free love and sex ain't nothing but a game. Don't never last.
Homeboy by Sunchi Ali. Welcome to the Coon Rhyme Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. Now, this week on the Coon Rhyme Report, we will talk about corporations as people with Ann Porter. And we will be restarting our monthly section of the Coon Rhyme Report entitled Voices from the Ether with one of the founding members of the Coon Rhyme Report broadcast, Mr. Tyrone Robinson.
Good evening.
Welcome to the Coon Rhyme Report. And we also have a special guest in the house. Tyrone will be introducing her, Ann Robus. Looking forward to that. Okay, now let's start off with Ann Porter. Can you introduce yourself? Tell us a little about your background.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me on your show. I got interested in this topic about corporations and how they're using constitutional rights to overthrow laws that we the people enact to protect our communities and our environment. I think I became aware of this whole phenomenon back around about the year 2000 when George Bush was put in the White House by a slim majority of the Supreme Court. And I was wondering, like, how could all of this be happening? Not only was he put in the Supreme Court, but there were all kinds of programs that were good for people in the planet that were being dismantled and tossed aside. And I happened to hear an interview with the author of a book called Defying Corporations, Defining Democracy. And I started reading this book, and they explained that corporations have gained more and more powers over the years to overthrow and overturn the laws that people pass to do good things, and that the root of it all goes back to corporations having constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. And just how they got constitutional rights is a long story. So this is what started me on this path.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, before we get into an in-depth discussion, I'm going to ask my co-host, Earlene Anthony, to really define what is a corporation, just a little briefly.
A corporation is a company or group of people authorized to act as a single entity, legally a person, and recognized as such in law. Early incorporated entities were established by charter by an ad hoc act granted by a monarch or passed by a parliament or legislature. Most jurisdictions now allow the creation of new corporations through registration. Registered corporations have legal personalities and are owned by shareholders whose liability is limited to their investment.
Okay. Now, Ann, let me ask you this. Can you give us a brief history on how corporations became people?
Well, corporations have their roots in the in the trade guilds of medieval England. For example, the merchants that sailed the seas in search of goods to trade and make profits on needed some equipment, such as a wharf, which was a big project. And one individual merchant would not be able to build such a thing. So the merchants would get together and they would build this one piece of infrastructure that would serve all of them. But sometimes this piece of infrastructure that they needed was too expensive, even for all of the merchants getting their money together. And so what they would do is they would go to the wealthy people who had spare money that they didn't need just for their bare survival, and they would ask them for contributions so that they could build this wharf. And what they would offer them in exchange was part of the profits that they would make as they went off sailing the seas, looking for things to trade and bring back, a profit from that. And so since they had such a strong motivation to do that, they didn't want to disappoint their backers, these financial backers, they would sometimes end up resorting to piracy, essentially, in order to bring back profitable loot. So this is how they would assure that they would bring back some profit so that they could pay their financial backers. And this was kind of the beginning of a system of shareholders. And that's kind of how the beginning corporations got started. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the most powerful companies, or the most powerful one that was the British East India Company. And this group was well known to the American colonists. And when the colonists won the revolution, they wanted to make sure that in their new country that they didn't have anybody out there doing things that like what the British East India Company had done. So they set up a system where if some group wanted to build a big infrastructure project, such as a road or a bridge or a canal, they would grant them incorporation, but they had these charters that put limits on such things as the time they could take to complete the project, the amount of money they could work with as they did the project, the amount of profit they could keep, and that would limit the profit that they it would limit the property that the corporation could own to only that which was necessary for doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
no.
So
mm-hmm. No, I was going to ask you, the British East Indian Company, the same corporation that was involved with the Atlantic slave trade?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand. There was a triangular trade. The ships would start out in England, go south to Africa, pick up slaves, go west to North America, unload the slaves and bring back raw materials such as cotton and indigo. Mm-hmm. Then the cotton and indigo would go back to England, and they would take those raw materials and sell cotton. Mm-hmm. And then when they would go back down to Africa again, they would bring guns.
Now, how did the coming of the railroad affect what was happening with corporations?
Well, the invention of the railroads really upset this whole system of charters that America's founding fathers had set up, because the charters were created by the state governments. The founding fathers felt that the states were the entity that should have the most power rather than the federal. And most things before the invention of the railroad, people lived out their lives, you know, in the distance they could walk from the place they were born, like maybe 25 miles. And so when the railroads came along, the railroads would cross state line after state line after state line, and they would carry goods and people from sea to shining sea. And this frustrated the attempts. It totally upset the ability of state governments to regulate this thing that was crossing state line after state line and operating in so many states. Mm-hmm. And the railroad barons, realizing that they were the vanguard of the Western expansion and that they were accomplishing so much of this goal that the country and the president, even President Lincoln, had visions of expanding. So knowing that they were able to do this, they got away with charging extortionately high rates of all the people all across the United States. And they were looking for a way to rid themselves of government regulation altogether. And they found that in the 14th Amendment, which was written after the Civil War to make ex-slaves full persons in the eyes of the law and to grant ex-slaves all the rights guaranteed to persons by the Constitution, some creative legal genius back then thought, well, if we could have this for this category of people, how about applying it to corporations?
And that's why I want to ask you about, can you talk a little about Stephen Fields and the U.S. Supreme Court?
Yes.
How did they make that happen?
Okay. Well, Stephen Field was the staunch proponent of corporations having rights. He was very much the friend of the rich and powerful. He was a frontier lawyer during the gold rush days in California, and he became a justice on the California Supreme Court and made friends at the time with Leland Stanford, who went on, he was governor of California then, but Stanford became one of the major railroad tycoons. And it was Stanford who recommended that Stephen Field be put on the U.S. Supreme Court back in 1862 when the Civil War was in progress and President Lincoln was looking for a justice to fill that seat who he could count on to uphold the Union. So Field was a very staunch Union supporter, but he was also a very staunch friend of the corporations. So that's how Stephen Field got on the Supreme Court.
And he was a pretty hard character, too, almost like a gangster in a way. Right?
Oh, I think so, yeah. When you read his biographies, there's all kinds of shoot 'em up kinds of things. He's reputed to have always carried a knife and a gun with him wherever he went. And he was a real lightning rod of a guy, and he was making enemies everywhere he went.
Well, let me ask you this. Can you talk a little about how the case, the Dodge Brothers versus Ford Motors, how that really, really brought the focus in on corporations becoming people.
Okay. Well, I think I should mention that in the 1880s, there was a ex-congressman, his name was Roscoe Conkling, who went before the court and said that he had been a member of the writing committee that that wrote the 14th Amendment, and that it was that committee had meant for the 14th Amendment to apply to corporations as well. And so that was established in the Supreme Court. And then now let's jump forward almost 50 years to what you're talking about with the Dodge Brothers. That was not until the 1930s. So it's important to understand that the Supreme Court had gotten a statement and they had built some more cases on this idea of applying the 14th Amendment and granting all those constitutional rights to corporations for that length of time. Now, when the Dodge brothers came along, Henry Ford made cars. The Dodge brothers worked for Henry Ford. And They were his major stockholders, and they actually wanted to go off and have their own car company. But one day Ford said, well, gee, I'm making all this money and all this profit, and I would like to use this profit to make more cars and to make my cars cheaper so that it can be the American dream that everybody can have cars and the people who work in my factories and make the cars can afford to buy them. He also wanted to pay them more. But the Dodge brother says, oh, no, you can't do that. We're your shareholders, and if you're making extra profits, you should be paying us more. And the Dodge brothers took Ford to court, and the court decided in favor of the Dodge brothers. And the court said that the most important responsibility a corporation has is to pay its shareholders more. And so that is what causes corporations to act almost as psychopaths today. Mm-hmm. That's why we have situations where cars that are known to have fatal defects that kill people are kept on the road and nobody does anything about it, because it would be unprofitable to recall all of those cars. And that's why we have corporations going out and committing genocide in certain countries and in certain regions of our own company, mm-hmm. our own country, doing, you know, terrible things to people. Mm-hmm. If they say, well, we did it for profit, they know the courts will back them up.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's talk about this for a little while. What are some of the, now we know, I want to look at the differences. If corporations are people from a legal point of view, I want to know the difference between people and corporations. What are the dangers of a corporation versus people?
Okay, well, the corporate form is custom engineered to make it possible to amass huge amounts of money. Mm-hmm. And so when you have these entities that are making enormous amounts of money, in addition to having constitutional rights, this really overpowers human beings. And this, I'd like to show everyone a little skit. This is a skit that compares some of the rights and powers of between a corporate person and some real people, okay? So this is going to be a race, and we're going to ask them, take a step forward if you have the right to freedom of speech. Now, the corporate person has that right, and so do the natural people. So everybody gets to take a step forward on this. Take a step forward if you have the right to equal protection under the law. That's the 14th Amendment. So the corporate person gets to step forward, and the natural people get to step forward, too. Okay, now, take a step forward if you have limited liability for harms that you cause to others. Only the corporation gets that. Take a step forward if you can write off your litigation expenses as a tax credit. Only corporations get that. Take a step forward if you have international laws like GATT and NAFTA defending your ability to make a profit. Only the corporation gets that. Take a step backward if you need clean air and clean water to survive. The people need clean air and water to survive. A corporation doesn't. Take a step backward if you can be put in jail. People can be, but a corporation that has no body can't be incarcerated. Okay, so as you can see, the corporate person is way ahead and the natural people are way behind.
Mm-hmm. Now, and isn't also the fact that a corporation can live for such a long time as opposed to the lifespan of a human being?
Oh, yeah. Well, a human being has a limited lifespan. Everybody dies. And corporations in the early days had charters that limited the length of time that they could take to do the job that they were chartered to perform. And those charters had an expiration date. But along with other laws that corporations have gotten over the years. Now they are licensed to go on in perpetuity without any specified ending point.
Okay.
So in essence, yes, they live forever.
And then also, when we come back, I also want to get into how corporations affect politics and the voting, especially these huge corporations run by, like, the Koch brothers. They always talk about the Koch brothers a lot. And then I guess Microsoft, you know, huge corporations. But just show you the difference in that. I want to talk a little about that too, the dangers of that, and then we'll get back into some of the things that we can do about it, and then we're going to talk about the move to amend. Let's take a break for our community calendar. We'll come back with the voices for the ether, and then we want to get back into that. Mm-hmm.
This is the community calendar for upcoming events. On Friday, April the 17th, 2015, at 6 p.m., Los Angeles Poverty Department and Drama Stage Qumran present a stage reading of If the Shoe Fits, Voices from Solitary Confinement. The location of the event is the Los Angeles Poverty Department Museum, 440 South Broadway, on the second floor of downtown Los Angeles. This is a free event. All are welcome. Light refreshments will be served. Following the reading, there will be a Q&A. For more information concerning the reading of If the Shoe Fits, Voices from Solitary Confinement, please contact 213-479-1764. On Wednesday, April the 29th, 2015, at 6 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran, Nasana Play Reading presents Wake Up. This is a play written by Tim Big Mac Mackey, and it's his story about gangs and his school of hard knocks. The location of the reading is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 921. This is a free event. Light refreshments will be served. All are invited to attend. There will be a resource from gang intervention programs to put on an information table. Following the reading of Wake Up, there will be a time for Q&A. And for more information on this event, please contact 213-908-6587. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. The call-in number for our show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. Now I would like to go to one of our last sections for today. It's from our monthly Voices from the Ether portion of the show. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Tyrone Robinson.
If it's Monday night, then you are listening to Voices from the Ether. Do you hear that gentle strumming? That tropical sound? That's our in-house guest today, Anita Robles. Welcome to the show, Aunt Anita.
Hi, Tyrone, and hello, everybody watching and listening.
Okay, will you play something for us?
Okay. If blood will flow when flesh is still at one, flying in the colors of the evening sun. Tomorrow's rain will wash the stain away, for something in our minds will always stay. Perhaps this final act was meant to clinch a lifetime's argument. Nothing comes from violence, nothing ever could. Born beneath an angry star, let's not forget how fragile we are. On and on, the rain will fall like tears from a star. like tears from a star. On and on the rain will say how fragile we are, how fragile we
Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I am from Argentina, South America. Uh-huh. And I came to the U.S. at the beginning of 91, around there, to study music. And I had the opportunity to record and do a lot of work in the Latin market, in the Latin world, and sang backups for several records of the big stars like Julio Iglesias and Luis Miguel, and then I, you know, I started writing my own material, mm-hmm. and so then I had a little detour with a personal big drama in my life, and right. after that I decided to go back to my roots, which was, you know, jazz. I always wanted to come to America to follow the path of jazz musicians, mm-hmm. and how did that came about, especially African-American jazz mm-hmm. musicians, and that amazing movement that came about only here in America.
Right.
And you know, I had a problem with alcohol and drugs, got clean and sober, and then started doing some CDs. I did a full CD with Latin jazz music where I include this song I just played, which uh-huh. is Fragile by Sting. And I thought it was very appropriate to include the same track in another CD I did, which was for recovery, because I really think that human beings are very fragile, and sometimes we forget that we need, you know, the protection of a God or a loving, infinite loving power, because sometimes in these days, or, you know, society or government or whatever it is, wants us to think that we are invincible mm-hmm. as human beings, and mm-hmm. that we can, you know, do everything. And I think that we're fragile, you know, we're mm-hmm. we're souls and we're delicate, and I had to experience that myself to learn to ask for help and to be part of communities mm-hmm. because I couldn't do it on my own.
Right. So can you play us a jazz piece?
Ah, okay. Well, this is in my travelings from Argentina to U.S., I stopped in Brazil a couple of times. Uh-huh. And I study there. I live there. I study the language. And it's a pretty amazing combination of rhythms and harmonies. And mm-hmm. everybody knows this song from Brazil.
Olha que coisa mais linda, magia de graça. É a menina que vê me que passa no doce balanço, caminho do mar. Moça de copo dourado, sou de paninha, seu balançado, mais que um poema. нашли на кюшави баса. Porque estudar sozinha. Porque tudo é tão triste.
Somehow, how can someone get a hold of your CDs, or how can someone get a hold of you?
Okay, so the Latin Jazz CD is this one here. I look so pretty. Well, I was living in Florida, and you know the humidity and everything. It was done part in Florida and part here in Los Angeles. You can find this in CD Baby through my website, which is anitarobles.com. Robles, like Paso Robles.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And I do have, you know, a project that is just about the 12 steps, like I just mentioned. That was a very, very important time in my life. And so I did this one that is called 12 Steps to My Heart. And I included a couple of songs from this one, which are not kind of Latin jazz, but it was nice to include them there because it was very nicely recorded. And my last project is a meditation project. And it goes along with a little book I wrote about the words of the alphabet and songs. And it has to do with learning how to meditate and how to breathe and relax and know that we can change the world starting with ourselves.
Right.
Staying
right.
Healthy, staying in peace. And just meditation has done so many great things. So I'm studying, I'm in school, studying music therapy, and, you know, life is good.
You're also a vocal coach?
I am, yes. I teach kids. I work with kids. I've been in, on and off working for the YMCA and other places that offer after-school programs and doing a little music and just, you know, working plainly with children, which I, you know, I got my certification, and I think that they are really inspiring. And when you either teach them music theater or just music from children's movies, it's really good. And I also teach adults, and I take them to karaoke, and we have a lot of fun. Yeah. So I'm able to do different things, and I'm, you know, blessed that I can do all these things with music and helping.
Well, we're blessed to have you here tonight.
Thank you.
Can we have you play one last song?
Okay, all right. I'm going to switch to be a little bit of a rockish kind of sound. But this is one of the songs that is included in the 12-step CD that I have. And, you know, before I play jazz, I always love to hear some American rock and rollers or, you know, songwriters like Carole King or Joni Mitchell. And I think I mix it all up with doing this stuff. This song is called Brainwashed. It's a good brainwash. That
good
I,
brainwash.
Yeah, I got a good brainwash with the 12 steps.
Thank you for joining us. This concludes this month's installment of Voices from the Ether. Now back to our host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson.
All right. Thank you, Tyrone. That was beautiful. I hope we get a chance to really, really talk in the future, do a show on jazz.
Yeah.
So we can talk about the development of jazz in some of the other areas like France and Germany and Amsterdam.
Uh-huh.
That really, really planted the seed. But let's get back. I want to get back to Ann, and I want to talk about a couple of things before we go to some closing comments. I still have this DVD. The first time we met you, I got this. Is this still available? It's called How the Supreme Court Turned Corporations into Persons with Constitutional Right, A Tale from America's Hidden History.
Yes, I still have physical copies, and a few people have threatened to put them on the internet. And I don't know if it would go on like Facebook or something like that, but it's possible. And if you would like to make it available to your listeners, that would be fine with me. I'd be most honored if you would do that.
Okay, a lot of information on. Can you tell us a little about the organization, the Move to Amend? Exactly what is that about?
Okay, well, Move to Amend was born out of this realization that corporations are overturning laws that people pass to protect their communities and their environment. Back around the late 1980s and 1990s, a group of people got together and they called themselves the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. And some of these people were repentant corporate lawyers themselves, but they really wanted to start raising awareness with people as to how this phenomenon of corporations overturning laws that were good for people was causing and continues to cause so many problems. And they went around trying to just sort of hold workshops and engage people in conversation, but they were always looking for some kind of an opportunity to bring this awareness nationwide. And the Citizens United versus FEC case back in 2010 created that opportunity for them. They're still pretty much the same people. Most of them have legal backgrounds, and they organized a coalition. They were watching the cases that were coming into the Supreme Court, and when they saw back in, I think it was about September of 2009, that the Supreme Court was taking on the Citizens United versus FEC case, and they could see who was on the court and what the likely outcome would be, they said, okay, this is going to be our chance. And kind of like surfers watching the waves roll in, they saw this and they started swimming. They organized the coalition. They got together like-minded groups of people. They started designing a website. And so between the late summer of 2009 and January of 2010, when the Supreme Court announced its decision, they were preparing. And so the day after the Supreme Court announced the decision, they pushed the start button and Move to Amend went up online.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that the decision that created what is no limitation on the amount of a person can give to a political campaign?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, that was the one that, not that there were not already some limits, but they scaled it. It took away a lot of those limits. And so now we have a situation. It was just after the Citizens United case that Congress swung from having a Democratic majority to having a Republican majority. And a lot of people were realizing, hey, we have no idea who these people are that are giving all these different contributions and who all these political ads are being paid for by. And, you know, there were organizations that have just sort of glitteringly general names, like the name Citizens United. It doesn't tell you very much about the group. And you can't really tell from it, you know, whether it's a conservative group or a progressive group or anything like that.
Now, what about the international powers of corporations? How can you touch on that a little?
Corporations can exist in more than one place at one time. They leave the country when it's time to pay taxes. They can leave, but then they can come back when it's time to take benefits from taxes and receive benefits that are paid for through taxes. So they burn the candle at both ends.
Mm-hmm. Well, two more things. How do corporations? How do this affect areas like China or Russia, which have a different kind of economic system than we have over here?
Well, it's all about the amassing of power and the consolidation of power and wealth. Mm-hmm. And so it is a worldwide phenomenon, but there's only one country on the whole planet, except for Iraq, which is controlled by the United States, and that is the United States, that allows corporations to have personhood rights and constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. No other country allows this. And so the mighty corporations and the, you know, the World Monetary Fund and so forth, they always end up coming back to the United States for something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, how do nonprofit corporations fit into the triangle?
If we could pass this amendment to strike down the idea of corporations being entitled to constitutional rights, nonprofits would also be included. But nonprofits and profits, meaning having stakeholders that need to be paid or shareholders that need to be paid. nonprofits don't have this. And so nonprofits don't have this this drive to do things like wipe out whole groups of people and destroy whole ecosystems on the planet, because they are not under the gun to pay shareholders a profit. So the law would apply to nonprofits, but it wouldn't get in their way. It's kind of like I live in a country where it's illegal for me or anyone to kill somebody else, but I have no motivation to kill anyone else, so I don't experience it as a hindrance. Mm-hmm. And so that's how it would be for nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. And one more thing, can you you touched on who was in that wrote the book Psychopath Next Door or something like that. I forget the author, but you was talking about how corporations develop the personality of psychopaths. Can you touch on that just for a minute?
Okay, well, she describes psychopaths. I don't, in that book, she does not draw the connection between the psychopaths and the corporations. There is another book, it's by Joel Bakken, and he is the one who draws the connection between psychopaths and corporations. And he bases it a lot on that Dodge Brothers case that you talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's that need to produce a profit to satisfy the ever-hungry shareholders that drives a corporation to act like a psychopath, in that a psychopath will do anything and without regard to who it hurts or what it destroys in order to reach its goal. And mm-hmm. for the corporation, that goal is the profit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the Dodge brothers, the brothers that would go on to form Chrysler and all of them. Mm-hmm. Okay, very interesting. Any closing comments? And I'm going to move around.
Yeah. Okay. I have two things I'd like to let your mm-hmm. listeners know about. In this last year, my street theater buddy and I have created a short YouTube video that gives a quick introduction to the corporate constitutional rights issue and move to amend. It's called A Question of Personhood. And if you go to youtube.com and you enter A Question of Personhood in the space for the title, you can watch it. It's 7.5 minutes, and we've worked to make it very entertaining as well as informative. It's a good first introduction and doesn't take people a lot of time, and we tried to make it, you know, humorous.
Mm-hmm.
And then one other thing I'd like to let your listeners know about is, in this last year, Move to Amend has launched its Interfaith Caucus. And this is, okay, the purpose of it, it says, we the people of the Interfaith Caucus of Move to Amend, as members of religious and ethical communities, share in common a variety of values and principles. In that unity of principles, we find the myopic and single-minded drive for profits by certain corporations has led to the degradation of environment in our society. Corporate power has come to dominate our existence. Values and principles we all hold dear are being violated daily by the actions of corporations that wield their so-called personhood to influence elections, legislation, regulations, judicial outcomes in their favor. And so people can find out about this Interfaith Caucus by going to movetoamend.org, and then there's a space, a search bar at the top of the webpage. If they enter interfaith-caucus, they can see that. And the Interfaith Caucus has put together a list that they call the sources of corporate personhood and impact of corporate personhood on all aspects of society and the environment. And there are lots of categories in here, but people of faith and people of conscience who are maybe not necessarily attached to a religious organization are invited to write in statements about how corporations ruling and destroying the planet are in conflict with their values. And they can send those comments into Michael Greenman, who is the head of that committee. His email address is mgreenman@gmail.com. And Greenman is spelled G-R-E-E-N-M-A-N.
Okay.
Thank you.
One more question before I move around for some closing comments and contact information. Is there any Supreme Court cases that's coming up to challenge this corporations as people? Or what was that other case that we talked about earlier with the vote, donation thing?
I don't think that we've got Supreme Court cases. I'm not aware of any that are coming up, and it's the Supreme Court who makes the decisions as to which cases they're going to accept. And with Supreme Court Chief Justice Roberts on there, I don't think that he's going to be taking on anything that would challenge the idea of corporations having personhood and constitutional rights. If anything, he would probably want to take on things that further the rights of corporations.
Okay.
Yeah, so Move to Amend is working for an amendment, which is a thing that's in the hands of the legislature.
And for those who want to get in touch with you to talk more about this issue, do you have a contact information?
Okay, well, the phone number is 323-255-1279. That's my number, and I am in Los Angeles. Your listeners in the Los Angeles area can contact me there, and people all over the country can go to movetoamend.org, and on the right side of the homepage, there is a sidebar, and towards the top of that sidebar, there is something to click on that says find a group near you. And they have groups all over the country.
Okay, thank you. Let me go over to Tyrone for some closing comments. You know, Tyrone, I keep thinking about when we started off in Jeremy's apartment.
In Jeremy's apartment, yes.
Years ago. Almost, 3 years ago,
yes.
Now. Mm-hmm. Closing comments?
The only closing comment that I've got is my guest for next month, if he comes through, is a writer, and he writes horror stories.
Mm.
So we'll have an interesting moment with him.
Okay.
Okay.
Closing comments from Anne. You say so? We still got about 30 seconds. Closing comments.
Well, I wanted to congratulate you on your radio station and the work that you can do for a community, and thank you for your great exposure of this situation here, you know, that goes to with my studies of political science and all of that in college. You know, I decided to, you know, try to go on and speak right English and go to school for it. And I love this country, and I'm interested in knowing how we can make it a better place, especially in these times that are so strange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I'd like to extend a special thanks to Ann Porter, Tyrone Robinson, Ann Robers, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by Googling in Qumran Report. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Homeboy by Sunchi Ali.
Homeboy.
There's only one blood, cause it ain't no sense in us trampling on the stones. It's us, down to the bone. Blood is thick, waters were known well, cousins were kept apart.
Brothers Katrine. Oh,